You are now listening to Out of the Blank.
Welcome to another episode of Out of the Blank Podcast. Camilla's back, and I got so many questions. First of all, how are you doing? I'm gonna ask again.
I'm okay. Yeah, we survived a Sydney semester in lockdown, so we're pretty good. Big props to any of my students who happen to be listening to this podcast. You guys are stars. Yeah,
I know we started off the last conversation kind of talking about ancient texts, and I'm pretty sure we'll probably talk about that some more as well too. But I wanted to ask, is there anything that's ever on your mind that you ever think deeply about, or at least like kind of get super interested into, that might be a little bit different from your natural work?
That's a good question. I guess I do wonder about human agency and about how that ties us to the future. I wonder why humans are so short-sighted and they're just so into election cycles and these mundane things, and they're not thinking at a broader perspective about what the future is going to be like for them and their children. I guess I'm a conservationist at heart, so I find that short-sightedness a bit disturbing.
I like to have the hope that it's because people actually care about the environment that they're in or the situations that the world is in, having more of an empathy for other people. But I think more selfishly, I think everyone kind of takes it as a way that it's going to affect their life and that their routine might not continue. Because like I think since we've talked, I've been starting to listen to a lot more music and get more interested in that instead of just doing podcasts. And I started to realize, much like a film is, a song is also can be, in a sense, a form of storytelling, a form of being able to transmute or translate an idea to someone and have them envision into their head, much like a book is. And I mean, that's the whole kind of interesting part about text as well, too. And I'm playing this old medieval style game on my Xbox, and there's the bards that are playing in the middle of the inns that are just singing a song, and it's about a story. It's like, I wonder how many of these ancient texts or ancient stories that are out there that we can read are something that obviously maybe it has some ancient history that we might be kind of still having today, but were these true? Were there blemishes, or were there things that were left out, included in, or hyped up in a sense? And I wonder how much history could actually be accurate on a concept of, if we examine songs instead of looking at texts, religious texts, or some type of form of, like, you know, anything that could possibly be written down in a book form that might seem as a historical event, like a letter from George Washington, or a letter from a president, or a letter from this and that. What about a song might have more accurate details on a depiction of, I wonder if there was ever a musician out there, much like a Picasso is an original. I wonder if there was ever a musician out there that decided, I'm just going to sing about exactly what's happening now. And that's the same thing with R. Kelly. He's got a song about, he's talking about, like, did you see me at the party? Were there other girls there? And he's literally just singing about, like, a fight that he had with his girlfriend, but it's just the conversation. He just sings it. And I've seen that, and I've heard songs like that so many times where I'm like, they didn't need to add anything. They just found a beat and went with it. And I wonder if there was a musician back then that thought about doing that. So I'm getting into, like, this mode of, like, we're on a road as people for self-discovery. I think subconsciously, I think what we go back to the beginning of what you said with, like, the election stuff and all that, I think that it's just fascinating entertainment, but I think people think they have a part in it more than they actually do. And I think when it comes to the grand scheme of things, there's no difference between the hierarchy that is now to the hierarchy that was way back in the day.
No, indeed. And it's interesting that you're talking about songs. The songs that we have from ancient Egypt hit very much a tenor that you just said, because some of them are written in tombs and are played by harpists who are singing, don't worry about today, you know, just enjoy your day, enjoy your moment that you have, and you, because you have no idea what will happen tomorrow. And so there is this sort of philosophy, if you could almost call it like Zen philosophy of mindfulness, be in your moment and, you know, it, whatever happens will happen. This is kind of antithetical to what I was talking about, like this idea of, you know, shouldn't we be looking further ahead? And others are like, no, you should be exactly in your moment at the time. And that's what the Egyptians were trying to channel, at least in song. Whereas in narrative, you do get more of this political intrigue on the one hand, like you were talking about, you know, letters from historical figures, we have that as well. And we even have some of the earliest fairy tales coming in from ancient Egypt. Like you may think Rapunzel is like medieval. Rapunzel probably dates back to about 1500, even further back before Christ. It's seriously old. Like I have the story that I studied for my master, my doctoral thesis, involves a boy jumping up to a high tower to rescue a princess. And this story, it's the earliest attestation we have of a boy jumping up to a castle to save a girl. She's in a really high tower like Rapunzel, and it dates to like 1300 BC. And so you're right. These song cycles, these story cycles, they have very long legs. They go back much, 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 much earlier than you could possibly imagine. And these ideas get carried on about unattainable love and true love and, you know, fighting for other people. These things carry millennia.
Do you notice the change in it all, though? Do you notice how many influences have literally changed the flow of, I wouldn't say time, but the flow of storytelling? You know, in ancient Egypt, you can come across so many things about someone sacrificing themselves, and it was seen as an appraisal. It was seen as something that was magnificent. But if anybody mentions, yeah, this person died because of suicide, you're like, oh my God, like it's just you have an abrupt answer to it. It's different. The times have changed. We think about this now differently. You look back at all the stuff that still stays the same when it comes to religious aspects or belief of something. You can translate that today in a different form. Maybe you're not sacrificing a chicken or a goat in a sense. Well, probably some people are. But, you know, now it's more about like I'm going to pray at home or read a religious text. But I start to notice that necessarily we're exactly the same as how we were in the ancient days, but our just train of thinking has changed. I think our morals and our understandings, the basic concepts of if I take a person from ancient Egypt and I put them in nice clothes or newer clothes like how I'm wearing or something, I drop them in the middle of a movie theater, nobody would be able to tell that that person was not from this time period. He would look exactly the same. Now, his thoughts might be different, his actions might be different, and his morals might be different because society has not evolved to the point of what we're at now. And in some ways, we're neglecting our basic features when it comes to understanding. Back then, you got into an argument with someone, you stole something, you died. A lot of it would come down to the boil down of death. Now,
that's still the case in some countries.
And some places, yes. But I think the large majority is that there's a lot of people that choose to attack or to choose to do something to destroy another person's well-being or satisfaction in the sanctity of that they have it twisted in their head. That is a defense mechanism to save their own presence. And I think this is a construct of information that's missing. The Great Fire of Alexandria, for instance, I would love to know what was in that. And was that fire started with malicious intent? Was that started with an accident? Was that just a misunderstanding? Was that a miscommunication? Was that a hiding of information? I don't know. But we have the Vatican archives that you're not allowed to look into unless you are specifically the Pope or someone that is in a high religious position, and that information does not go out. For me, I look at that as like you're keeping secrets from the world. You're keeping information about who we are from the world. I don't have no clue what's down in there, but I feel like that information should not be on lock and only held for higher elites to be able to look at. I've talked about this probably for like the past 3 years on this podcast, is the Vatican archives got to hold some type of secrets. But I'm translating this to now times. Our president over here in the States says that he's not going to release the last files of the JFK. What happens is you've opened up the door for mistrust, and you're asking for trust, and you're not getting any of it because you're not being honest. You're not giving us the information, whether it's the good, whether it's the bad, whether it's whatever. You have to take people for warts and all. And sadly, you haven't given us the chance to accept you for warts and all. You've hidden those blemishes, and now they've slowly started to boil out. I think everybody can trans like this with their own country. But I think this is important because I think there's a piece of us that's missing. And this is why we're so prone to attack, is because we don't even understand who we are. And when we look at someone and we see them doing something, we think that might affect something that might possibly be something that's on the trail of something that could be us. And I think that's like, I don't know, it's a lot, I know, but I'm like in this state of like, what is this?
Yeah, but I mean, I think there have always been secrets of elites. That's how the elite stays the elite. We know about secret societies. We know about even sororities and fraternities in your fine country. There are whole religious groups based around the keeping of secrets, like the Rosicrucians or the Freemasonry, exactly. And not only that, when we think about ancient societies, the fact that the priesthood was also the keeper of secrets is very key. Even in ancient Egypt, one of the key titles of a priest is Heri Seshtar, the person who presides over secrets. So the idea of secrecy being tied to deep religious knowledge is not new. The fact that the Vatican presides over documents they don't want to be seen is pretty much in keeping with faith in many respects. I'm not saying it's a good thing, but I'm saying it's a very old thing. And there might be things that they are not permitted or have never been permitted to make public. Political things, on the other hand, usually have a life of about 70 years. Usually they do have to get turned over to the public. I know I heard
that. You have to wait till everybody dies.
Documents pertaining to the royal family of the throne of England, for instance, had to come out recently. Pertaining to the sacking of an Australian prime minister, for instance, which was a very scandalous period in the 1970s, and absolutely the first time ever that a monarch has sacked a prime minister, and first and only time. And they finally had to release the documents because the 50 years had passed. So there are certain clauses that allow secrets to come out, but usually in the religious sphere, that's never. they have a lot at stake to keep secrets close.
I think there needs to be a trust built back up. And I think that comes with being honest of your own intentions. I think the idea that now that social media has opened up the door for nefarious intent to be highlighted, this was nothing throughout history. There might be same concepts of like secreting religious texts or secreting this or that throughout history, but there's never been social media like throughout history. There's never been that type of eye that is literally on every single thing, which is exposing all these dark secrets. And sadly, now, like I think probably 5 years ago, 10 years ago, nobody would have thought that the government was doing all these types of things, or no one would even raise the question. There were probably a select few, but now it's most of the population that's starting to understand that the government might not be the type of person you want to trust. And I think what happens is that sends people on a path of destroying or trying to get rid of what that essence should be. And instead of trying to destroy it, I think there needs to be a way of reclaiming it or trying to find a way to make it better than it was before. What happens is it's much like when you let a kid, you know, he's sneaking off like he's 4 or 5 years old. He's sneaking behind you like when you're watching TV and he's grabbing a cookie from the jar. You know he's there, but you're like, oh man, he had a hard day. I'm going to let him get the cookie. Then every day he's doing it. Every single night he's doing it. You've opened up that door for where now he's not taking one cookie, he's taking two. Now he's taking the whole jar. Now your kid has a health issue because he keeps eating a jar of cookies every single night. You start getting to this point where you watch it, it doesn't start off on level 100, but it leads up there. It's progress. Rome wasn't built in a day. And sadly, as easy as it is to destroy something, it's much harder to build it back up. So you have to find a way to look at these things and come with logical conclusions. General discourse. Courts used to be a type of thing that people, I mean, they're still kind of like this, but you could talk about, you know, you could watch and observe. It's like an entertainment kind of show in a way. When I watch these trials on television, it's like a show. And I don't really like it in that sense because I feel like it's just really weird. That's like a big weird thing for people to be really interested in, like the fact that so many people are on it like glue. Like, oh my God, this is fascinating. Oh, it was the sister that did it. I'm like, hang on a second. This isn't your favorite sitcom. This is an actual court case. But I think the general discussion and the flow that was an open thing for people to understand and really observe and learn more was the point of it. And I think now it's become a form of entertainment. And I think there's ways to shift our critical thinking again, or shift our way of talking or having conversations or understandings. And that starts with leading into, maybe we have to find out what those roots are. Archaeology is important. Egyptology is important. All these things are important because they help you define who you are today by showing you that every problem that you face is not something that might not it's an individual problem, but it's not really new. There's a lot of this going on. Your thoughts, you're not the only person. You're not scourged or cursed of the earth to think the way that you think. There are people that have thought this way throughout history. And if you don't have those pieces, we're like a puzzle that's missing a piece. And that piece might be the fact that there's information that's not given to you because they feel like you don't deserve it. And that's what gets me, because I feel like it would answer a lot of people's issues.
The one thing that's really changed, though, is the fact, I think, we have these sort of peaks and troughs, because if you think about ancient societies, a huge amount of the population of most ancient societies couldn't read or write. So they didn't have access to a lot of information. They only had access to what was conveyed to them orally. What we have to assume from that is, in the ancient world, most people didn't know most things about what was going on at high level. And that really was the case, more or less, until the 19th, 20th century, when literacy became much more broadly available to people via at least a primary education. People started reading the papers. The papers came out twice a day and people used to read them. What we have now is kind of almost the very pointy end of that trajectory, because people now have access, most people in at least the developed world are literate from the time at which they are taught to read, which is a very early age. Now, they could read technically everything, and they are so swamped with information. We have so much information at our fingertips that we're literally overwhelmed by it. And I think that sense of overwhelm is what is also driving a lot of conspiracy theories, because there's so much that is conflicting that people think, oh, well, that maybe they're all wrong, maybe just one's wrong, and people actually aren't really sufficiently exercising their critical faculties, and maybe because they're so overwhelmed by information, they don't know who to trust anymore. So basically what we see is that we are now victims of our own highly educated state. We can't, we're finding it very, very difficult to separate what we think is right from wrong. So it's very weird. It's sort of like a first world problems on a really, really crazy scale, I feel, because the idea of distrust is new. It's actually fairly, or at least it's being played out, as you said, on social media in such a broad way now.
It's just crazy, because the way that we can say things so simply and toss, like, people call people racist without even understanding the impact of that word anymore. It's starting to lose meaning. I see it get called 24/7 out there. And then conspiracies as well, too. What are we labeling as a conspiracy? The fact that I talked about in the beginning about the lab, it probably came from that lab. It only makes sense to check it out. Then you start seeing that they lied in court in front of everybody and the NIH did fund it. And you start going, oh, well, you didn't put it in terms that means what we thought you meant. And I'm like, you start to see that was labeled as a conspiracy. You couldn't even say it, or they would take it off. And I go, this is what I don't like, is that you've opened up the door with lying. And now there's been a large array and disinformation that might be out there. And then now they can just be like, we can fix it. Like, people thought for the longest time that media and the government had a button that they could just press and it would fix your life in an instant. Then they started to realize, with social media exposing all of it, there is no button. But they don't admit saying, yeah, we kind of played you. No, they double down, and they keep doubling down, and they keep doubling down. And then now they can control the way that you receive information. It's not like reading a book. You have to go and find every single book, go to people's houses and light it on fire and throw it in the street. We can just block it from our articles. We can block this from our sites. We can do all these types of things. It's different. And I think this affects people mentally. And I don't want to get into the full politics of things, but that's what societies were always talking about, were politics. It was always political stuff. It was always talking about supreme, the king, the ruler, all these types of things. But now it's gotten to a very weird point where it's destroying our own happiness Before it was a confrontation, it was an argument. It might have been a brawl in a street. Now it's every single step you take outside. You're afraid of being the person that you might want to be or who you really are because you're afraid of how people might receive you. It's either that or you're the other person that likes to shove their personality right in somebody's face. You should never introduce yourself like, "Hi, I'm a Republican." You're like, "Excuse me? Like, what? I don't even know your name, bro." And it's like, that's what happens now. I see that so much. And I'm like, we need to find a way to take our attention off of this corrupting kind of topic in a healthier way to where we can build ourselves back up to being able to talk about it without coming to swords and pitchforks with each other. It's a very confrontational standpoint. And I'm wondering if you've seen anything religious text wise or anything that comes into ancient texts that might have a descriptive factor that might be even released, or do you think that might be something that's hidden right now?
Well, I mean, what the kind of circumstances that we saw in the States, people kept using the word civil war, you know?
Because it was before, father against kid.
It was literally father against kid. This is something that we saw in ancient history at the time of the Roman Republic, where there really was civil war several times. The civil war that we have in Egypt is unfortunately really under lock and key to us historically, because we really don't know what happened. It was never described. I think I talked that to you about that in the last podcast. You know, we know there was civil war, but nobody actually ever described it at that meta level. Whereas we do have, you know, we do have that in the Roman Republic. Now, it's interesting though, because America has seen civil war before. So Americans should know it when they see it. And yet I wonder, like, if it is turning people against people, how has history helped us come out of this before? Can we use information to get ourselves out of it? I wonder if, I mean, usually it has been after great bloodshed. At the moment, I feel like we don't have any bloodshed, but we do have a situation where there just is that sort of cold war of tension and aggression. And I think people really need to come into a new phase. People need have to accept reality, that they have to just accept that people are different and not use it as an aggressive pushback against each other. I think you're right. We have to work out a new way of engaging with each other and just accepting things as they are. The problem at the moment is people are refusing to accept reality. You know, people are refusing to accept the rule of government and the rule of law. They're taking the law into their own hands. They're not accepting mandates. They're not accepting, you know, they're storming the Capitol of your phone. So what do we do under these conditions? I think we just have to wait and see what history shows us. People have to be, in history, people were usually quashed. You know, one side was sort of violently overthrown, but we can't do that anymore. We can't. So unfortunately, the modern day teaches us, or at least modern day ethics teaches, you have to learn to live with other people. And we can see that humans find that very difficult. Humans aren't good at that. They're much better. Sort of violent overthrow, and then somebody has to deal with it and the other people are fine for a couple of centuries, and then it rolls into a new era.
Well, there's no change that ever gets done. The same thing rehashes every like 30 years or so. So
exactly. It's a cyclical thing, right?
Yeah. I think it comes from a point that people rather act with emotion than thought. Sadly, when you get a bunch of – this is what's going to scare me, is that if we look at, like, the future, whether it's my country, your country, any country out there, what information are they going to be looking back on that's going to be – they're going to be running off of? Is it going to be that, you know – I don't know. Think of the most random thing possible that is the craziest thing. Is the Earth flat, maybe? That's going to be information they're going to be running off of, because there's an article out there. Because sadly, with journalism dying, I don't think people understand that it doesn't just affect us now. It affects the future generations and what they're going to look upon. The best thing that I can hope for is that the internet just dies and we get a total rehash where people have to go back to books.
That's what I'm hoping too, like a total blackout, you know?
Yeah, but people like it's going to suck for people who invested so much of their time onto the online devices and stuff like that. But I think there needs to be a break in a way. I've gotten to the point where I just use social media for messaging and then I'm gone from it. Like, I don't need to worry about liking people's posts and doing that type of stuff. If I've talked to you, you know who I am. You can reach out anytime. But when people develop their relationships through devices, and social media apps, liking things and fearing that if they don't like this person's post, every single post they have, that means that person's going to not be their friend anymore and unfollow them. And then they get this contemplation in their head, like, do they still like me? And it's like, that's a very slippery slope, because once that starts, you end up being the person that every time they go out to experience a minute of their life, they need to be filming it. They need to be taking a picture of it. They need to be updating their status. I've seen those people. I know those people. I'm not friends with those people, because that's all it is. It's all their whole entire life has now been consumed. I think people don't really notice these addictions when they start to happen. I went to school for addictions counseling. One thing I'm addicted to, I could tell, is not caffeine, but energy drinks. Honestly, it's just drinks in general. But I've cut out coffee and now I'm working on energy drinks. I notice the addiction, but I don't really care, because I notice that it's there. I'm not really super worried about it killing me right now. I got plenty of time. But then you notice, like, smoking cigarettes, vaping. I've went from nicotine in my vape to zero nic. You start getting to this point where you got to notice these things when they start. And the biggest one that people are not understanding and are very underestimative in its effects, really, are social media. It is one of these things that now life, corporations, businesses, working careers have now been based on social media, and understanding that you need an internet connection to make money. And that is a slippery slope, because now we've let go of the steering wheel of how to control your own life. We did it when we used to walk with cars. Now that used to be a luxury. Now it's a requirement. It's going to go there. I don't think people understand that when you stop reading in general and you choose to get it through a screen form, books start to be phased out. That's why it's very important that there's people that read books. There's places to keep these books. You ever been to a library? You walk in there, there's not a whole lot of, like, younger crowd there, because it's not appealing. You didn't make any of it appealing. You got to find a way to get people interested into these subjects again. And that's by creating something good, not just creating something to have something there.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think what's really interesting about social media, and there is an interesting sort of side of social media in the academic social media, because sometimes it really is the humble brag of, oh, look what cool stuff I'm reading. I'm reading some really cool philosopher or something, you know, and they'll take a photo of a page to show just how learned they are. So you're right. This is sort of the more narcissistic of those profiles. But the other side is to use your knowledge to diffuse knowledge, you know, to find topics that are transcending time and space. And I mean, there was a case, for instance, just today that I tweeted about, because there has been a whole series of storms in Egypt, in southern Egypt, and the storms were rising the water level and they were washing scorpions and the snakes out of their holes. And so all of these scorpions and snakes were coming out into the city and going into people's homes. And a couple of people very tragically died yesterday, and 400 people or more got bitten by poison, by scorpions, and had to be treated by the hospital. So the hospitals were having to divert doctors from COVID units to help people with scorpion stings. And it just put me straight in mind as an ancient historian. Well, in ancient Egypt, when there was the inundation, which was also high water, right? It wasn't through a storm, but it was high water. That was probably also what was driving the scorpions out of their holes then. And that's why Egyptians used to walk around literally with jewels to ward off scorpions and snakes from biting them. There are all of these recipes and spells against scorpion bite and against snake bite. We have a whole handbook of snakes from ancient Egypt. So what does this tell us? It tells us that these plagues, these things that affect people, even the yearly plague, you know, like COVID-esque, you know, attacking people, you know, in yearly cycles, and all of these creatures, the bite, these things never go away. People always need protection. And so people are always reaching out for protection in these times. So I was just tweeting, like, wouldn't it, you know, isn't it interesting that this has always been a problem in Egypt, and this is a way they could ward it off? And I posted a little beautiful statue from the Metropolitan Museum of Art where there's the little baby Horus, the little god who was in the myth of the sick baby, and he's holding in his hand snakes and scorpions because he's going to ward off snakes and scorpions for you. So this is, he's as important now, really, as he ever was. Religion, I'm not saying that there are modern Egyptians using these talismans. What I'm saying is these issues keep coming up for us, right? The Egyptians did have spells for plague because they felt like there were cycles of illness coming, and they knew that certain gods were bringing that pestilence to them, and they wanted to ward it off. And so I do feel sometimes like we, you know, I'm not saying religion can save us, but religion has often been people's way of encountering these things that feel completely out of our control. You know, and I think part of a lot of the fear that humans have nowadays is because they just feel very, very powerless. And I think, you know, people who have faith, I think, feel a little bit more protected in many ways by that fact that there are spirits or deities that are giving them some protection. I wonder about all of this fear and aggression and conspiracy, and I wonder about the role of religion in it, whether it is causing it or whether actually it's the lack thereof that's also causing it, that people don't feel like they feel like something has their back anymore, you know?
Yeah, I think that's part of the identity crisis, might be either religion or something that's been fading out, because religion is a metaphorical shield. But when we look at like past events, if we talk about things being cyclical, always happening, the government's tested and created weapons like this before, or types of things on accident like this before. There's always been this, yet people still put blind faith in whatever things get said because the timeline has changed. News used to be, oh my God, like the news would report about the government, but now it's like the government's teamed up with your news network. Like it's interesting. For a long, like a past month, Australia was being lit up by every news outlet in every single country talking about, you see this abusive with the cops and all this type of stuff. Now the news on Australia is targeting the US. So I'm looking at it like everyone's putting their finger at somebody else because nobody wants to talk about the issues that are going on in their own countries. And this is the thing where it's like, it's the most obvious show of, like, there was a Joe Rogan episode I've talked about before. They had the main CNN doctor, the medical chief, on there. And Joe Rogan just kept hitting them with questions, and the guy didn't have answers of it. He was talking about the vaccine. He was talking about its effectancy. He was talking about all these types of things. He goes, and you guys lied to people saying it was a horse medicine or something like that. He goes, yeah, my CNN people shouldn't have said that. The next day on CNN, they went through that whole entire episode talking about every single thing that he got him on and making sure they retrace it and cover their own ass. And it was like, you start to see the bull, like the BS a little bit. I'm like, guys, this is very, very important. It's a prime time to understand that you need to forge out your own thoughts. You cannot lose common sense all because you're looking for direction. The only person in your life that should be giving you direction is you or your family. It should be people that actually give a shit about what happens to you. You're taking advice and you're taking these ideas from people who don't know you. And it's very hard because with that disconnect, they don't care if you live or die. I hear so many people talk about like, oh, that person died, or oh, that person, you know, got a new job. They're like, oh, congratulations. It doesn't affect them. They're not family. They're not friends. They don't know that person. It's just like if you start talking about, hey, did you hear Matthew McConaughey got a haircut? What do you care? Like, you don't know him.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that the media has a very problematic role. So they have always supposed to be the ones that are giving information, but it has become abundantly clear from the example that you've given me and many others that basically they're just trying to get you to watch the next news cycle, right? They're really just trying to keep you addicted to bad news, stupid news, whatever news, and to cover themselves so that they can keep giving you more news. And it is very problematic, and we do become addicted. If I have an addiction at all, it is to reading the news, and I've never had that before.
Well, they copied YouTube creators, like clickbait stuff. Usually YouTube videos would have like, guys got arrested, and then it's a thumbnail of him being like arrested by cops. And then you watch the video and he does not get arrested throughout the whole entire video. But you watch every minute because you're hoping that you're going to see him get arrested. The news has done that. Like, there was a person, Tim Pool, who's like a political, like, journalist type guy. They go, goes on anti-Semitic rant. And I'm like, what? And I click on it. 3 minutes of this rant. None of it was anti-Semitic at all. I was like, did anybody else notice this? Like, is there something I'm missing? And everyone goes, no, it's clickbait. I'm like, the news shouldn't be doing that with clickbait. I get it. You used to see tabloid magazines do it. But these are people that are looking to this thing that used to watch every single morning before they went to work because they knew this was their information for the day. This was going to help them have conversations with other people. Now it's escalated, and everywhere you turn is a political talking point. And I'm like,
yeah. And it's supposed to make you angry. That's what's the worst. So it's created in order to make you angry, in order to make you abrasive. So people are walking around constantly affected by this news, which is, because clickbait is supposed to get a reaction from you, right? Oh my God, how appalling. And that's the problem. That's the problem. So the media is pushing us towards having these strong reactions, and is unfortunately making our confrontations then with each other even more abrasive. So it's creating a real problem. Mind you, would we be better with no news? The news and the fact that everyone is entitled to news is also a relatively new idea, you know?
I think the news has evolved into a form that's going to lead us down a very dangerous path. And I know so many people that look at it like, well, it's important now. I'm like, the fact that news has gone from actual the numbers or the letter networks down to the Daily Report or the John Colbert Show, where it was comedy news, but it still gave you the news in a comedic form, which people are like, ha, laughing and clapping at it. Now it's gone to Facebook or Instagram or Twitter to get your news. Now it's gone down to TikToks that are going to tell you the political elites. And then that boils down even lower.
Yeah, it does. I mean, once your cat is telling you the news.
Yeah, but that's what's scary is that when people go, well, these TikToks are independent people really saying the truth. And it's like, that might be true. But you don't understand is that that might be an accurate person giving you real information. The next person's not. The next person's telling you that the earth is flat and the whole government's been lying to you for ages. And then now you already don't trust the government and now you believe it. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I'm not trying to shame anybody else's reality, but you gotta, it's like, when I'm in the UFO community, there are people that talk about like I've talked about UFO and this, like, NASA over here has released a bunch of like stuff and made public announcements about these things that they can't explain what they are. It might be some otherworldly tech, but I have people that talk about future people, like they've mastered time travel and are coming back to the past. And I'm like, are you messing with me? Cause it's like a mental health thing. If you make fun of that or laugh at what you think is a joke, then they take that as an insult. And this person actually might be their reality. So we necessarily need to understand is this person crazy or is this person angry at maybe something that's been going on for so long and now they're feeling validated? That's where like the weird sketchy line is. And I think that goes back to the old concepts I've talked about, which is truth wizards. There used to be people that used to be appointed as judges and cops. There are people that could sense out the BS and make a decision that could sense the truth out of you. We don't have a lot of that anymore. You don't get these long-form conversations like me and you have where you can sense out who a person is. You know I'm not a bad person. I know you're not a bad person. But when you watch a 10-minute clip on the news, they can disguise it for so long where you don't know what this person thinks. I have plenty of those people from CNN that follow me, and none of them are like who they are on the TV. They're way a different side. They're like, I can't talk about this, but check this out. And I'm like, why don't you do it on the network that you have? You have a platform where people listen to you. It's like, well, they have a certain narrative we got to talk about. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
The world.
Yeah. But it always has been like that. Reality has always been negotiated by people in power. I mean, you know, we have all of these military texts from ancient Egypt that tell us about, you know, going up to the Middle East and like killing all these people and getting all these things. Yeah, but how much of it's true? If you've only got one side of the story and you've got all of these people's, like, for instance, I was reading a text with some students where apparently King Seti I, the father of Ramses II, goes up and he wages a campaign against these people called the Shasu. Yeah, but you start reading between the lines and what you find out is the Shasu are a nomadic people. So they're basically just a tribal people. They're not, who are they going to wage war against? I mean, and then you look a little bit further and you find that there are actually texts from the Middle East where those rulers had asked Seti to come up and do a cleanup operation on these nomadic people because they don't want the nomads on their territories. So basically, the king of Egypt isn't going in and being a big warrior. He's doing some of his powerful mates in the north, like around, Jordan, Palestine, Israel, a favor. He's doing them a favor. And he's just going up and doing a cleanup operation. He comes home and he writes about it as a military victory. And it's totally cynical. So I'm reading it with students saying, this is what colonialism looks like. This is how, you know, people go in, they clear out tribal peoples, they take them all back to Egypt as slaves, and they claim this is a military victory. Right? So it takes a lot of different gazes to understand what that actually means. And it's important for our students to read these problematic documents to understand these things have also happened. This happened in Nazi Germany. In Nazi Germany, they ran out of Germans for their factories. They went and stole people from around Europe to work in their factories. You know, these things happen all the time. And you basically just need a monopoly. The territorial monopoly, and you can go up and treat other peoples really badly. This is also a modern day problem.
That's what scared people.
You know, modern day slavery exists. You know, we know that modern day slavery exists.
Yeah.
And it's really fascinating to show people ancient texts and say, same old shit.
Yeah.
This is exactly what it looks like. And unfortunately, the Egyptians had this nasty habit or painting it even as a military victory, which is even more cynical as far as I'm concerned.
What really heats me up is the fact that people talk about America being a place of white supremacy. And it's like, well, then why are they making it harder for Asians to get into college? Because there's such a high majority of Asian people that are getting accepted into Harvard because they're doing so fucking well. It's because they care about what their future is going to be. This idea of white supremacy, did you know they labeled a governor and like that's running Larry Elders? I guess he would be called a conservative, but he's a black guy. He's a guy running to be governor. They called him the black face of white supremacy. What are we talking about here? You start to realize that people are being institutionalized by the real history, and it gets spun in such a narrative where you get some like social justice warriors. In a sense, it's a good idea, but they don't do it well at all. The one guy who was teaching it at a university tried to kill a bunch of firemen who were stopping the California fires. He tried to light a fire around them and get them trapped inside the fire. That's a guy who's a professor. We need to look at our schools and make sure that there's no crazy people in there, in a sense. And I think it's not their fault. They weren't born like that. But I think it's what happens when you start getting one-sided information. And this is where I talk about the politics is so important, is because when you only choose one side, when you only understand one thing, you get so angry that if anybody disagrees in the slightest, you must punch them in the face. You must do something to stop them. And this has never been like this throughout history. There's always been a feud, but there's never been this giant eye on what is going on around us. There's been people like, you can't talk about the king, you can't do that, but you still had to live. Maybe it's a factor that it's too easy to survive. It is very easy to survive and get food, get water, get Amazon will take anything. You don't have to leave your house to go to the grocery store anymore. That only sparks up more of your energy being put in to feud with other people, where you start spinning a narrative and following it and then worshiping it to a point where you're literally following modern day cult leaders. And that's kind of what these influencers are on social media. They're people that have a, like, influencer, the word.
Yeah.
That's weird sinister. In itself.
It's totally sinister. It's totally sinister because it basically operates on the assumption that someone in their lifestyle is so paradigmatic for the way it should be, which is already, like, it fetishizes a lifestyle. And it, yeah, it is. It's extremely worrying, because there is something really worrying about the fact, I come back to an earlier point I made about, we are the most literate we have ever been. And yet watching something on Insta could make us change the way we do things. It will make us change our diet, our exercise habits. It'll make us change our political, you know, leanings, whether we choose to get vaccinated or not. Like, it makes us make these enormous life decisions. And you ask yourself, what is the value of the school system if grown adults with degrees can turn around and make these decisions about their lives that don't seem to have any connection to reality or to critical thinking? It's baffling to me. What use education at that point? Sorry, that's a very provocative.
Yeah. We got to a weird point in society where the shift has come from looking to people with academic degrees or educational standpoints to be heroes, to now we've looked at the person that can just take a selfie with duck lips or have their ass showing in a photo. It's really mind-boggling to me when I get my astrophysicist friends on here and they talk about how the Earth isn't flat, and they talk about UFOs, they talk about all these types of proportions that show you an evidence that the Earth isn't flat. But I look at my one buddy who has a flat earther on his podcast, and that has over like 15,000 views in a couple of days, when the one that explains why it's not, the science of why it's not, what we understand to be true, the dimensional shift of why that it's impossible that the Earth is flat, only gets a couple hundred. It's because people just want to hear the craziest stuff, because you've opened up the door with a lie, and now people don't know what to believe in. So they like to think that it's the craziest option. They like to think that there's people, being pedophiles online trying to trap young children. Is that impossible? No, there might be a small amount of people doing that, but not everybody you meet. Not everybody you meet. That's how you get QAnon, and it doesn't make sense. But people don't like to think about things. They hear they get Manchurian Candidate. You remember that movie? It's literally like you say one word, you talk about race, you talk about any of these things, people just go, I'm fucking triggered, and they run off. And that's the scary part, is because they're not thinking and they're not hearing everything anymore after that. They just get tunnel vision. And it's like, no, we need to talk about things. You need the conversation we just had, that needs to be talked about in a healthy manner, like it was. It's not talked about that. If you disagree, disagree. But don't let that stop the flow of conversation. Agree. Yes, you should have that, but also you should bring up the other perspectives as well too. I get in arguments with liberals, Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, progressives, all of them. Not that I actually argue with them, but I don't agree with the point that you can say that these other people are wrong. You need to step down from all your ideologies to truly understand the basic function, that it's all about making sure that we are happy and we survive. And sadly, there's a teacher that had to change the name of a class that was called Love and Happiness. She changed it to call just Peaceful Meditation or Mindful Stimulation, because nobody would sign up for a class called Peace and Love. You would think that everybody wants peace and love, but nobody would sign up for a class called Peace and Love.
Fascinating. But I think some things people are perhaps rightly wary of the term happiness and of the term peace, because they don't necessarily believe they exist, like true happiness, pure happiness. And I understand that. It's interesting that a lot of these conspiracies come out of people saying that they are thinking more critically, they are being more critical. And that's what makes it really interesting. So if both sides say, I'm looking below the surface, I'm understanding that there's a subtext here, and yet this subtext is leading them in completely divergent directions, for instance, you know, people aren't looking at the other side of the story, therefore, you know, I have to go down this way. And I think that's sort of just the end of the line conceptually, from when you really start thinking of everything at a very high level, then people think, oh my goodness, that's so complex, we have to break it down a little bit. And then it sort of almost becomes too simplified. So I think the next wave is probably going to be more rational, because like right now we have overthought our existence. We're so triggered by everything that everyone is, like, as you say, becoming quite irrational. So I think I'm hoping that the next 50 years will bring a more rational discourse. There must be.
I think there's this new generation Well, there's new this new generation that's coming up, and I think it's coming from parents that are like having kids at my age, and they're making sure that their kids don't really go on. Like before, you used to be like, hey, be careful what your kids watches. You don't want them to see anything violent on the TV. But then it's kind of like, oh, screw it. But now you're seeing where they've weaponized Sesame Street. They had Big Bird telling kids to get their vaccine. And this is where parents were like, what is going on? What do I have to watch literally what my kid's watching to make sure you're not perpetuating some type of thing that's going to brainwash my kid or do something like that? That's my decision. It's my child. That's why they haven't mandated it for kids, is because you can't tell a parent that their kid has to get something. It would have them lose their shit. And I think this is a very strange time where I think this is – I'm actually pro them doing this because that's going to cause the parents to turn off the TV and spend more time with their kid. And then that's going to usher in a generation of kids that aren't addicted to these devices. Sadly, the kids that are 14 and 15 right now, they're already addicted to Fortnite and Minecraft. But the little tiny ones that are still in like barely going into grade school yet, they're going to be the ones that are going to be different from all the others. They're going to be the ones like, I want to spend my time outside again, just like my grandparents did that before the age of the cell phone, before all this type of stuff started happening. Those are the ones we got to look towards. I think those are going to be the people that are really going to reset the balance. And it'll probably be systematic and end up boiling around again. But I think the generation that I'm in, the one that a little bit below me, I think this is the last kind of technological shift one. Hopefully, I'm hoping there's a turnaround, but everything now has become weaponized. I would have never thought in a million years Sesame Street would be doing a show or doing an episode all about getting your vaccine. That to me was nuts when I saw that. I was like, Big Bird has a Twitter? What are we talking about? Like, it's strange. It's using your heroes to get your point across or using another person's heroes. It's like if I saw Superman talking about smoke cigarettes, I'm like, I don't want to see that at all. That's my hero telling me to do something. And it's paid by a tobacco company. It doesn't make sense. You need to make your own decisions in life, and nobody's going to give you the route to do that. That means no influencer, no politician, no historian, no whoever. You need to find out who you are. And the way to do that is accept you for who you are. You got to wake up in the morning and smile when you get out of bed. You got to be not afraid to say something in fear that you might lose a job, afraid you might, you know, someone might take you a different way. You need to say what you feel, say how you speak, do everything that you possibly can to be who you are. I am so pro people being who they are. I've spent a lot of time as a kid not wanting to be anything that was me because people did not like that. And now I just don't care. And I'm happier for it. And I think people need to do that for themselves as well, too. People spend too much time trying to model themselves off of somebody who they're not. And it's a shame because I bet who they are is beautiful. Some people might have a very abrasive personality, but I think that doesn't mean that they're not people. They're not someone worth of value. They just might not be considered, you know, something you want to be with or someone you want to talk with. You need to be yourself. Someone's going to accept you for you. And that's the best thing about this world, is that there's so many people out here that there's so many people, and there might be a few that don't like you, but there's plenty of other people that will like you. That does not mean they need to be your enemy. That just means you don't have to associate with them. That's fine. Nobody's going to lose feelings if you shake your hands and walk away, but you can't try and push someone to the point where they can take their own life, which is what you see with social media. People will do that because they don't care what they say. Academics battling on Twitter, it's good to have like an intellectual debate and stuff, but you see things where someone will put up something and be like, this is inaccurate, this is false, because based on this and this and this, and then they'll put up a thing and that person will block them. You didn't do it right. You got to talk to them like, well, what about this? Or what about this? Or I saw this that was interesting. Maybe you would like it. You're talking to them like a person, not being like, I'm better than you. Get out of here.
Yeah, it's problematic. We need to find new ways of relating. I feel like the school systems have already tried to do that. I wonder why it's not working. And I think sometimes we put too much of this into like an educational context, and it's sort of the last place that young people are actually looking and listening. You know, the modeling really has to come from the family. I think you're right. I think we really do need to hunker down and work out as family groups, as communities, how we want to be, how we want to be, because we put far too much pressure on educational systems. We put far too much pressure on TV shows, like you say. We're using them the wrong way, and it's the wrong, they're trying too hard almost. They're trying too hard, and it's not having the effect that it needs to have, you know? I mean, you know, there have never been so many positive, you know, memes or ads in the universe. Be yourself, be mindful, be kind. Like, I've never seen so that happen so much as in the last 10 years, and yet it's exactly the opposite of what's happening, right?
It's the age of the philosopher.
Yeah, but it's the age of sort of the motivational statement more. And I think people aren't really taking that seriously. I think people really have to let themselves hit rock bottom and work it out for themselves rather than to have these motivational statements constantly fed to them in their school system, in their social media. I think people really have to work it out for themselves. And that's the problem. People are just so overwhelmed that they're not finding the time to dig deep. And I think a bit more digging deep, a little bit more thinking, a little bit more reading is what humans are going to need, you know. That's perhaps, I hope, our isolation is doing that for people. It's been a very interesting time coming out of lockdown and interacting with people again, finding out how they've been spending their time. I hope some of them have been trying to really work out what they love, work out what they're interested in, work out what's important to them. You know, for me, it was about changing my philosophy to teaching and really thinking about how I educate.
I think that's important because it's going to be teachers. And I've talked about it before. The education system is shot, but mostly it's making a turnaround for sure from when I was a kid. Before, they just locked you in a room because they didn't know what ADHD was. They were like, this kid is obviously mentally challenged. Which is obviously hopefully not the case. I don't know. I might just be rambling and it's not making sense.
No, but it has been terribly diagnosed and terribly dealt with, because everyone knows that ADHD is something that really requires attention, teaching and kindness and also finding where the attention wants to focus, because the attention will focus on what it's interested in.
The corporate elites. Let's talk about it. No, I just can't.
I mean, you know, whatever. But I feel like that's so often the case. I've got, you know, quite a few friends with ADHD who were unfortunately misdiagnosed or diagnosed very late. And they look back and they say, my God, you know, would have liked to have finished high school. Brilliant minds. And I think, you know, so much of what we do needs to be open to diversity of all kinds, neurodiversity of all kinds. How can I extend my brain to your brain?
Well,
how can we meet each other conceptually?
People expect to just change the system. I'm like, well, you have to look at the key points and the steps that lead up to what changes the system. And what changes the system is, there's been a stereotype that the education system needs improvement. It does. There needs to be way more teachers. You got a heavy workload every single year, and you expect each individual child to get the attention that they need, and every parent that yells at you because you're not giving their child enough attention, that needs to be fixed. I have every reason to hate the education system with a burning passion, but I don't, because I understand is that the information you learn and you learn, the best thing that you can do is not hold regrets and you make it better. And the way to do that is by trying to find a way to make sure that people are getting the time that they need. And that's in all systems in life. That isn't just the education system. That's in every asset of, if a person can get an hour with a therapist, if a person can get 30 minutes with a therapist, you need things like that in society where a person can be singled out in the best possible way that gives them the individual time that they need, not shamed. Society is more than happy to single out a person and shame them, but there's never any single type of thing that talks about and fixes issues of a single person. It's a broad band brush for all of them. And I think that's where we need to start looking at society, is if you truly care, like this, during our lockdown almost a year ago, there was a push to be an entrepreneur. It's easy. Go be an entrepreneur. You got to start your own business. Our society is pro people starting their own business. Then people did it and they failed. And then they got done with it. They're like, maybe it wasn't for me. Maybe it wasn't. No, it's because the system is set. disguised as pro entrepreneur. But then when you go and take it, it's all corporation. They don't want you there. They just want you to know that the option's there if you want it. So if you don't take the shot, that's on you. That's not us. We gave you the option. I'm like, society is set up in such a way that when you take that shot, there's so many giant corporations out there. There's so many laws or bills you have to get to be able to do the thing that you want to do. My buddy wanted to start up a hot sauce company. He goes, dude, all the patents, it's like $6,000 in patents and, you know, getting your FDA thing. And I'm like, so how will you expect a person just to take that entrepreneurial shot? It's impossible.
Yeah, no, no, it's geared against the little guy. And that's really a real problem in general, you know, and unfortunately, we live in an incredibly unequal society, all of us. I mean, the it is profoundly unequal. And I think, you know, the more politics gears itself towards getting rid of that inequality, you know, tax the rich, God damn it, for the love of God, please. I mean,
well, people really focus on the race aspect of it. I'm like, it's not just a race aspect, it's a class aspect.
Race is tip of the iceberg. It's such a class thing, you know, and obviously, you know, unfortunately, for historical reasons, certain ethnicities then get funneled into certain, you know, work groups and certain classes, and it just feeds more and more inequality. And yeah, we need to work on that more. I'm certainly thinking more and more about that as an educator. How can I get people talking, get people using their brains, get people interacting and thinking creatively.
Keep me on my toes. I was not expecting this conversation to go this way.
Well, do you have it? Yeah, nor was I. Do you have any more questions from the ancient perspective? I don't know.
This was a perfect episode. Camilla, you're literally a sunshine. That's what you are. This was fun. I haven't talked about this stuff in a long time. I like talking about this type of stuff, and nobody ever wants to bring in perspectives. And I love it because we had a natural, just a regular general chat and about all these topics that a lot of people choose to avoid at all costs, or they choose to shove it in your face because they don't know how to talk about these things well. And this is exactly what it was. There was no yelling. There's probably disagreements. You might disagree with some of the things I say. But we're talking about it. We're not arguing or anything.
No. And I think what part of the problem I think comes originally from this very Anglo hatred of disagreement. So disagreement is done under cloak of, you know, under the sort of shade of darkness, like behind a social media profile, right? So you can stab from behind there, but you're going to be really nice to people's face. This is a very Anglo thing to do. And I think that's what we have to get rid of. There has to just be, you know, we have to come out from behind those figures and really talk to people, really have a conversation. Because disagreement, this is the problem. I've noticed in Anglo culture, much more than in, for instance, my other culture of Italian culture, that disagreements are really, people are scared of it. You know, we're not going to talk about politics. We're not going to talk about religion because, you know, it's not, we can't agree, so we shouldn't talk about it. It's completely the opposite in a lot of other cultures where it's like, let's hash it out. Let's, you know, get down to the nitty gritty and really, really talk this through. And I enjoy that. I like to understand why people, you know, think about certain things certain ways. I would say I find, for instance, it really interesting that conservative people are often not interested in the environment, because I'm fascinated by that, because I think being an environmentalist, being interested in conserving the environment, is essentially conservative in many ways, because it's about maintaining a status quo in the world, or, you know, or improving it, but going in a sort of way of going back to basics, which conservatives often want to do in a moral sense, but they don't necessarily want to do it in an environmental sense. I've always found that really fascinating. Well, you know,
I think conservatives are more scared that their freedoms or whatever their ability that or their routine is that they're doing now is going to be taken away. And I think that like people misunderstand what conservative means, because when you, as soon as you say conservative, people go, what do you want it to be like when there were slaves? It's like, well, that's not what that means at all. That means that you just know basic values that you grew up on and you would like to still see those today. Like for me, I would be called a libertarian, but I also don't think that the government needs to be destroyed. I just think it needs to be focused and it needs to be limited on the powers that it has, much like every social media platform needs to go by new terms and regulations. I get it's a private network, but you're so big now, you have to have a better regulation for it.
But that's the problem. I mean, the problem is that governments need to be big enough to keep those social media networks under control. That's the problem, right? I mean, I don't know if I agree in a big government or a small one, but they need to be big enough to be able to actually make decisions that are going to impact companies, for instance.
Well, it should never have more power than people. The government shouldn't have more power than people, but sadly with all the manipulational things that the government does, I think the government's needed, but I don't think they should be messing with anything domestically. I think they should be only worrying about foreign attacks and all those types of situations. But it's so hard because there's so much money and nobody understands the concept of how much, like $1 billion. I could not imagine what $1 billion looks like in a warehouse. I don't think you could either. I don't think a lot of people could understand what $1 billion looks like, but they have so much of that. And they're like, oh, we just lost $6.6 trillion. You're like, what? Where did that go? They're like, we don't know. I don't have receipts for it. I'm like, what? Like, what?
No, I know. These things are unfathomable to us. And I don't necessarily think that people do need, I mean, I'm someone who would argue for the minimum wage, for instance. I'd like for a standard basic wage that is livable. I think we do need to, you know, just have a more social system in terms of waging.
I mean, I make 12 an hour. It's not livable for $2,000 a month place where I live. So you need people to live with you. But at the same time, people that are getting paid $18 an hour, you're not incentivizing good work. You're incentivizing people to be lazy. See, that's the weird part about raising the minimum wage, is when you raise it to 18 an hour or 20 an hour, people don't have any job security anymore. They're like, we're paying you $20 an hour. You're going to do what we say, or you can get out and we'll pay someone else $20 an hour, which I think hinders people's freedoms. And then if you pay people too low, you have people that don't care about the work that they do. So I'm like, there needs to be a happy middle. And I think we need to settle on what that is. And it's crazy because money is just a corrupting factor in so many things. Like, I like my job, so I'm willing to work and make the money and hourly that I do because it's at a gym and I love working out. I love the gym. It's a free membership too. I have my perks of why I choose it, but people just want to get a job to make money rather than if they want to get the job that makes them happy. And I think that's a weird time in society when we choose what value over value is.
No. Yeah, but some people don't have that luxury. I mean, I feel like I do. I have had that luxury and I feel very blessed, but I understand that that's not the case for everybody. I wish it were.
Yeah.
But I know that it isn't. And I just
don't know. I don't know why it's so difficult for people to do the things that they want to do. You think there would be more viable options. I feel like I would hire someone who was more passionate about the job rather than someone who was trained in it. Because training or education or experience in it can be taught. But when you're passionate about something, I could hire you. If you were a master in, let's say, psychology, I could hire you to be, you know, a psychologist. But you're like, well, I have the education for it. So I can just, you're not going to go train outside of your working hours. You're like, I'm going to take a break when I go on vacation and do all these things. But the person who's actually passionate about the human mind, they're going to spend every single of their minute of their free time just learning more and more because they love the topic. And I think there needs to be more options for people to just understand that they have this ability in them to expand and fill this job application, because a lot of these skills that people have are learned and you're not giving people options for them to be able to learn the thing they want to do.
That's what we need. We need teachers who help people find out what their passions are. One of the main problems that we have with young graduates is they're not quite sure what they are yet. And we that's why that I feel like that is really part of my role, and helping people understand what is your thing, what do you really want to do. You can't all do the same thing, so you have to find out your version of whatever it is that you're into, you know, and letting people get out of that cookie cutter idea that they have, or these, you know, they see some documentary and decide they want to be an Egyptologist. Well, okay, what does that exactly entail? What does that, how does that connect to your talents?
Nice. And I think Indiana Jones cap.
Yes, that fabulous hat. Yeah. Like what is it that you really want to do with your life? What makes you happy in the everyday? And a lot of people will be like, actually, yeah, I don't really love reading that much, but I really love designing. Great. Or I really like making websites. Great. How can we fuse whatever it is you're into? Languages, IT, design, art, anything. All of that can be fused in meaningful ways. And I think that's basically, that's also what educators have to be. They're sort of midwives of the mind, you know?
I couldn't agree more, Camilla. And I really appreciate you for giving me your time. I know it's getting a little bit late over there, but I'd love to have you back on again. If I continue past 1,000 episodes, it's always a pleasure chatting with you. I always learn something new. Is it just your Twitter where people can find you? Got any other sites that people can?
No, Twitter's the best. Otherwise, they can find my personal website. If they have like a deep intellectual question, they can always drop me an email if they need a more extended format than Twitter. So Twitter's best.
I'll make sure I link that in the description. Is there anything you want to say to anybody out there listening before we wrap up the show?
I'd just like to say, find your passion. If you want to talk to me about it, I'd love to hear about it. If it's Egyptology or anything connected to it, I think it's really important for people to find pleasure in thinking about things, connecting things together, and whatever that may be, finding something genuine that you love is going to make you, if not a happy human being, at least an interested human being. By God, isn't that the best thing ever?